Sure, sounding good is important, but when it comes to your business, you've got to look the part as well. Your visual identity goes hand in hand with your brand voice. But that goes way beyond a beautiful logo. On today's episode, I'm joined by Nikki of Seedling Digital to talk about how you can create a stunning visual presence that conveys your message and converts your customers. Let's get into it. You're listening to Voice Your Brand, the podcast dedicated to helping you launch and grow your brand online by injecting it with a whole load of personality and creating content that turns followers into loyal fans, all through the power of a unique brand voice. If you're struggling to stand out online, getting stuck writing your product descriptions, or feeling pulled in a million directions when it comes to marketing your e-commerce brand, you're in the right place. I'm your host, Nell Casey, the founder of Fate Creative, an e-commerce copywriting agency that writes things for brands that sell online. Before we dive in, make sure you hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. All right, let's go. Hello and welcome to the Voice Your Brand podcast. Today, I'm joined by Nikki Hamilton from Seedling Digital. Nikki is a digital designer and her specialty is helping women in business develop a cohesive online presence that's clear, that's memorable, and that converts. She creates gorgeous visual identities for businesses of all kinds. Today, we're going to talk specifically about e-commerce businesses and how your visual identity ties into your brand personality and voice. Thank you so much for joining me on the pod today, Nikki.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here and have a chat.
I love chatting with you in our other groups, so I'm so glad that we can actually get on today and learn all about what you do. And so let's basically dive into it. So how about you start with telling us a little bit about your background and a bit about you?
Yeah, cool. So my background is I was previously working in a digital marketing role for a corporate super company. I was with them for a few years. Prior to that, I actually owned my own product-based business. So I was completely self-taught in that arena, and that kind of gave me the launch pad to go into a corporate role. So I'm self-taught, and I'm a big fan of like short courses and, you know, upskilling on the job rather than going to university. I'm quite vocal about the fact that this kind of industry is moving so quickly that I don't think traditional education can keep up with kind of the tech and all of that stuff. When I got pregnant, I actually, they told me that my contract wouldn't be renewed, unfortunately, after being with them for quite a number of years. So it was, you know, one of the hardest things that ever happened to me at the time, but it gave me the push I needed to get out and do my own thing. So I kind of hit the ground running when my baby was about 4.5 months old and went out to start my own business using all the skills I'd kind of honed over the last 6 years or so. And I've just been crazy since then. So a bit of a, whirlwind journey, but I can't see myself ever going back to a job now.
It's one of those things you're like, I don't think I'm employable anymore.
Yeah, no way. Love the flexibility.
Tasted the other side of it and you're like, I don't know if I could go back.
Totally. Yeah.
It's funny. I actually really like have those similarities. Obviously, I don't have children myself. Mm-hmm. But I was also in corporate and it was kind of the same thing. I was a bit like, don't know if corporate's really lining me up.
Yeah, but, totally.
Working with small businesses, and I know that you're so passionate about working with small businesses, you know, and I think we definitely share that. And I also didn't know that you used to have an e-commerce business.
Yeah.
Which now I understand why you have this great expertise, because I was like, oh, she's just like, you know, perfected the the visual identity and all that kind of stuff, which is what I wanted to bring you on. And now I'm like, oh, you have an e-commerce. I think you keep that on the down low a little bit.
Totally. I don't talk about it too much. And I think a lot of e-commerce businesses will probably be able to relate to this, but it was my first business and I kind of set it up not knowing anything. And so it took a great deal of energy and learning and development and reinvestment. And then I kind of burnt myself out in that business, and starting Seedling, I kind of took everything I learned, you know, to do it right, to set up your financials, like all that stuff. And I've, built a successful business. Not that the other one wasn't successful, it's still going, but it's just a different realm being in the service side.
And it allows you, I guess, to take that experience and, you know, bring it to the other side and
get
an understanding of, you know, really what your clients are going through and what they might be having difficulty with, but also what that potential looks like for them on the other side of it. So yeah, that's really great. So obviously you created Seedling Digital as a way for you to run your own business. And I know that you have a really strong mission about working with women in particular. Do you want to talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, I think that one's just getting stronger and stronger by the day. And it's not that I don't like working with men. Actually, some of my favorite clients have been men, and I have ongoing clients that are men. But I would say like my branding is pretty specifically targeted towards women, and I'm quite vocal. I have an e-course, and that one's called Women Wealth WordPress. I actually had two men join this round, which I was quite surprised about, but most of my audience is women. And I also think like if men can get through all of my brand messaging and they still want to work with me, that they're going to be dream clients, like regardless of their gender. So I just think that through the experience of losing my job when I was pregnant, I just think there's such a divide with in traditional work roles of men earning much more money and having much more super and, being prioritized for promotions and things like that. And so I'm just so passionate about women making money and having financial freedom. And I had that experience of like not knowing if this was going to work, you know, when I was pregnant, and how I was going to be able to contribute to my family, and knowing that I'd been out of the workforce for a little bit, and how hard would it be for me to find another job with a small baby in the corporate world. So I had all of these kind of financial concerns. And from that, then I really had that kind of drove me, I think, to have a really good year. And through that, I just realized like, you know, what it's like to have kind of uncapped earning potential when you work for yourself and you can set your own prices and you can choose who you work with. And I was so proud of myself. Like my goal was to kind of make the same amount I made in my corporate role, and I almost doubled that in my first year. So I just was like, wow, this is so cool. Like when you're doing your own thing, you're following your joy, you're doing what you love, you're working with clients you love, like I just think all women should be able to experience that, really. And there's such a huge movement of women in business, and I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really, the same kind of thing. You know, I have dream clients that are both men and women.
Yeah.
But particularly when you work with a woman that's like, this is what I want to do. Like,
Yes, let's
make that happen. Like, that's awesome. So what about, do you want to just talk about, what Seedling Digital is or what you do there?
Yep, totally. So I build brands and websites, basically. So I kind of talk about it more as like a cohesive visual identity. So everything I do is based on strategy. So I really love it when I get to work with clients on the brand and the website, because we kind of really dig into the strategy at the start and build like a strong brand based on meaning. And then moving on to the website part, we can kind of, I get that little bit more time to play with the branding and see how I can implement it, you know, to bring it to life and kind of play with it a little bit more. So I really love the process of doing both. I like doing either or as well, but with websites, I only work with WordPress as well. So it's my chosen platform for many, many reasons, but that's what I do.
I think that's really important as well, what you talked about, like the being able to create the brand and then visualize that onto a website, because of course the brand is more than just logo and colors.
Totally. It's
every gamut of that experience for that client and what they see, or for the customer. So do you want to talk a little bit more about how you approach that creation of the visual identity?
So as I mentioned, it really starts with that strategy piece. So I have quite a comprehensive intake process. So I have like three forms that the client needs to go through, basically. So the first one is like the background to their business, why they started it, what their goals are, their missions, who they like to work with, all of their target audience. And it really like gets deep. I typically say to clients, like, if you can book me in kind of a month ahead of when you need to start and then really take time to fill out the form, you're going to get the best results. So there's actually three of them. So there's kind of like the strategy, meaning, and then there's a visual one, so they can kind of talk to me about the styles they like and all that kind of stuff. So a little bit of that one's a little bit hard, because sometimes it might be like what the client likes isn't necessarily what their audience is going to like. So it can be kind of a mesh bringing that together and I guess representing it. I'm quite big on having some kind of symbol or mark or something to represent the business as well, not just a word. So I really do a lot of like research into like synonyms and metaphors, and I kind of pull out all of the words that they give me in their intake forms and kind of play around with those a lot. And it's quite a process to end up, you know, with something that represents everything, that looks like beautiful, and that's going to translate in small sizes and big sizes. And it's always like such a weird creative journey, and it's always like when I'm in the thick of it, I'm like, oh, this isn't working, and it's so frustrating, and then it just clicks and I'm like, that's why you can't just do a logo, because you know, if you just draw something, like, yeah, like I can draw you a tree if you, you know, if you're an arborist or whatever, but it's not gonna, it's just gonna be a tree.
yeah, exactly. So, and it's so interesting about you talk about that process and how lengthy it is, because,
yeah,
it, you know, it's really quite similar to the process that my clients go through in the development of that brand voice, because
totally.
You know, it's not just, oh, I like this website, can you make me sound like them?
Yeah.
You have to go much deeper, because you are trying to create something that's bigger than them, and it's bigger than themselves, and it's something that their customers are going to relate to.
Totally.
Not just like, oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Like, tick the box and you're done.
Yeah. And that's sustainable as well. Cause like, yeah, it might sound good for now, but like, are you doing something that's based on a trend that doesn't actually represent you? And similarly with branding, like, you know, there's a lot of kind of waves of style that come through. Like there was like the watercolor fad and all,
you know? So, I really remember the watercolor fad.
And it can just make you seem super dated really quickly. So that's why that strategy side's super important.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how much of it do you take into account in terms of the client's brand voice when you're creating that visual identity?
I do touch on it a little bit, because I think it's important. And like, I know that if you're doing a brand and a website, it's a big investment to do both. So, I think it's pretty rare for kind of small businesses to be able to do the brand, the website, you know, the tone of voice and the brand voice piece with someone else, and then the copywriting and then the photography. And, you know, so I touch on it a little bit, but it's definitely not my area of expertise. And I do have copywriters that I flick work to, and they go through like a full brand voice process. And I know when I do my side and they do their side, like those are the portfolio piece websites that I'm like so proud to show off. Like I know they're going to do so well and see the, like the benefits of that investment. So
yeah, because it really has to go hand in hand, right? Like
it
you
does,
can't have a, you know, really a kind of a specific visual identity. Maybe it's like a very clean, natural visual identity, but then the tone of voice is quite cheeky and out there, because there's that disconnection.
Totally.
And it's just not going to work, and your customers are going to see right through that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not going to be able to develop that brand long term.
Yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
Yeah, I totally
agree with that.
Which is why designers and copywriters, we're all about the collaboration.
Works
and
so well
talking
together.
Yeah. Making sure that we're on the same page. Yeah.
100%.
And it, you know, I definitely know, particularly for small businesses, it can be a big investment to go through that whole thing, the whole process at once. But gosh, when you
it's
do.
It's so worth it.
Yeah.
And I also think as an e-commerce business, like, you know, a lot of e-com businesses, they don't have a brick and mortar anymore. So like your investments become your online representation, which includes your visuals, your tone of voice, your website, your social media, like your email funnels, like all of that, that's your setup costs really. And like compared to leasing a building like that we used to have to do, that it's so much less. And so when people say things like, oh, you know, I'm looking for someone that doesn't cost an arm and a leg, or, you know, I'm like, you're going to get what you're paying for. And those types of businesses aren't going to last. And, I definitely understand it's investment. And whenever I get a client, like I make sure I kind of hammer that home. I'm like, I know it's a big chunk of money. I know it's an investment, but you're paying for all my experience. And like, I'll give that back to you in spades and I'll do the best work I can for you. But you can also look up like grants and things like that. There's quite a few at the moment. So there are other ways that you can make it work. And if you talk to your provider about payment plans and things like that, you know, I think it's worth it. I've invested in similar things myself. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same from the other side, my visual identity.
Yeah.
It definitely is an investment. And I think as well, when you do make that investment, you feel something for your business. You feel
totally.
Deeper.
Yeah.
I think
you have the confidence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know that when you go out there and you present it to your customers and or they come to your website and you have that confidence to say, I'm going to send traffic to my website because I know when they get there, they're going to feel something for it and they're going to want to buy from me and to engage with the business. So but yes, I totally
You're just more legit.
Hey guys, listeners, we're not out here telling you have to drop a bomb on your business. We're just passionate about that.
And there are different people who have different levels of experience and different price points, right? Like there's something for everyone. But I just think, you know, if you're just like really going to go and do your own Shopify website or whatever it is, like you're just going to get something that's stock standard and you're going to miss all of the small things that take you to that next level.
And I guess that other side of it, and what I also wanted to chat with you about was you know, that user experience. And you know, as we're talking about, your branding goes beyond your logo, and it goes beyond your tone of voice and your brand colors. It also goes beyond just a static website. It's actually about how does your customer interact with you at every single stage, at every page, from like landing on it to checking out and getting that confirmation. So I know that this is something that you're really passionate about as well. So, you know, do you want to talk a bit more about that from a UX perspective?
Yeah, totally. I think you said like from landing to checkout, like really, I guess user experience is all about the journey. And so in one way, it's like making it easy for the customer to take the journey that they want to take. So that's really like checking your data and being like, what are the most clicked on pages and like making them prominent. So for example, like a bank page, like if you go to, you know, Westpac or whatever, and you look there and there's like this big, beautiful message about home loans on special. But if you're not looking for a home loan, you just want to log in. You don't want to have to like scroll past the home loan section and scroll past the make a new account section, you know, to find your login if you're already a client. So you really have to like think about the different test cases, I guess, and make everything easy for them, really. And so in some ways, like obviously, yes, your website is a marketing tool for new clients who are like having their first touch point with you and you want to make a good impression and make sure that they come back, but you also might have repeat customers. So you need to make the checkout process easy for them. So things like having account, you know, so they can just log in and their addresses saved and things like that, or having PayPal. Like PayPal is a massive one. If you just offer Stripe because like the fees are better or you like it more or whatever your reason is, people who use PayPal religiously just won't check out because it's like two clicks to check out with PayPal. So it's such a simple thing. And there is a lot of chat in e-com communities about like fees and blah, blah, blah. But again, it's just the cost of doing business. You should be like considering that in your pricing. And if you can make it easier for people to get more money, then those fees are, they don't even come into consideration really.
And you don't want to be, you don't want to miss out on those people that are like so lazy that they won't get up from the couch.
Yeah, totally. Which is like literally all of us when we're watching Netflix.
Hey, I'm like glass of wine in one hand, phone in the other hand, scrolling through going, oh, that's cute. Like, can I buy that right now? Like, that's how it works. That's how
totally. So it's like, you know, I use PayPal as an example, but it's all those small things. It's like, make sure like when you mention another product, it's hyperlinked so that they can go and check out that page, and like having things like at the bottom, like, oh, you might be interested in this as well. Or like if it's one product and it's multiple types, like have it in a drop down so they don't have to go to another page to add another color, and all those just little things like just make it so much easier.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot that goes into it, so working with an expert can really help. But, you know, what could a business owner do, you know, if they just wanted to kind of go, all right, I want to improve that user experience on my website?
Just user testing, really. Like I think when you're close to something, you just don't see it, and there's all like you don't know what you don't know. So you can't improve things if you're not aware of like all the little nuances, I guess. So I would just literally get some like friends or family to go through the website and try and get people of different ages. Like if, you know, if you can get an older person as well, they're going to really highlight any pain points that you've got in your journey, because it's just a little bit, then, you know, they're not as native as we are. So we're, you know, some things we might have to work out a little bit, but we can work it out. Older people are really going to kind of find any gaps. So if you have family members or friends that you can just get them to go through a checkout process, like make them a discount code so they don't even have to pay, but like do everything and like tell you what the issues are, tell them what you wanted to, like give them use cases, I guess, like how many clicks does it take you to find this product or, you know, your bestseller, and like make sure that you can improve that journey, I guess, like reduce the amount of clicks, and just let your ego go. Like don't, you know, don't be like, oh, I did that for a specific reason. If people are having troubles with it, your reason doesn't matter. Like you need to consider their reasons instead. So like in terms of improvement, it's all about just taking on feedback and yeah, implementing it, I guess.
I don't know if you remember this, and I came across it years ago, but there was this guy who had this website, and he was like, you pay me, it was like $5 or something.
Yeah.
And he'd get his mom to test. It was like user testing, but it was website URL was something like my mom breaks your website or something like that. It was like, and you just paid, and he set it up so he would record what she did. And
that's then he's like, amazing.
Hey mom, come and test this website.
Oh, that's a really so great funny. Business
yeah.
model.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just like,
I'd pay that for sure.
For sure. Right. And yeah. That's the thing. Like there are sites out there that look, if you can't get a family member or a friend to do it, there are websites out there where you can,
yeah,
a small amount, and someone will go through your website and they'll, you know, record it, and they'll say, hey, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This was helpful. This was not helpful. And like, they may not be your target customer, so you might want to pass that kind of feedback through that filter, but
yeah,
at least you're getting as many people as possible to give you that feedback, and you might see, oh, everybody keeps missing that button.
Yeah, totally.
Can I change it to a different color?
Yeah, exactly. Or make them bigger, or make them have a little wiggle or something like that.
Yeah. And even don't just do it on desktop. Like, get it on mobile.
Because, totally. You know, mobile's even higher than desktop in terms of use now. So, yeah. So
yeah, a particular, and depending on like your industry and your type, but e-commerce stores for sure. Like, can someone easily go from your Instagram to find a product on your website? Like, that's a bugbear of mine. If I see something cute on Instagram and I'm like, oh, I want to go check that dress out, and it's from a recent post, and I can't like search your categories or you know, use a search bar to find that dress, like you know, you're gonna lose customers that way. So
totally.
Really think about it.
We really get used to, I guess, best practice, hey, and if it's not like that, then it's so easy to just click out.
Move on. The next thing. Okay, so we talked a little about that user experience, but what other issues do you kind of see that crop up when it comes to e-commerce websites?
In terms of user experience or just any issue?
Just any.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, there's always things that, you know, you've looked at enough websites and you're like, oh, that comes up a lot, right?
Yeah, totally. I think like, I think we've already talked about them a little bit, but I guess kind of focusing on the marketing side more than like making it easy for people to check out. So you really need to have both. So like putting a shop button like front and center. And a lot of e-commerce stores as well, like kind of miss some basic SEO stuff. So you have a really, really rich opportunity to kind of be using meta descriptions for images and image alt tags and meta descriptions for all of your pages. Like when you have a lot of products, you have a great opportunity to capture SEO, probably more than service-based businesses who are just kind of like about, you know,
this, five standard five-page website.
Yeah, totally.
It's a blog, so you're like, oh, I can't write a blog again this week.
Yeah. So, you know, especially if you have a niche product, like you should be capitalizing on every kind of SEO kind of function that you can. So like I mentioned before, linking from this page to that page. And when you're using those links, make sure you're using like the name of the product that it's linking to, not like click here for pink leotard or, you know.
Yeah, don't hyperlink pink, click here. Hyperlink pink leotard.
Exactly.
Girls or
yeah. Yes. You can say click here, but don't hyperlink the click here. SEO is a big one. And I guess that one's, again, that thing of like, you don't know what you don't know, but it really is, it's not like a mystical art. It's like, just do a bit of research. Kate Toon has some really great short courses that really will give you like the gist of what you need to know without going crazy technical. Like if you're managing your own site or whatever, just having a little bit of knowledge about that's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, and that's it. If you've worked with a great web designer to set up your website and they have that SEO knowledge, then, you know, that side of it is covered. And if you have just some basic understanding about how to optimize a product page, like you're most of the way there.
Totally.
Yes, we can dive into like your more, your bigger SEO strategies, like your backlinks and stuff like that.
And but blogs.
Optimize your product pages and just see what happens.
Yeah. And even doing that, you're probably like 50% ahead of like what most people are doing, because it really does have this kind of, impression. Like most people have an impression that SEO is like this crazy hard thing, and it's really not. So yeah, just doing those basics makes a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure. And it's definitely something that I'm like, love chatting about as well.
So. Yeah.
Definitely going to do a whole episode on SEO.
Yeah,
like,
let's just cover
it, because it's so meaty and it's just so important.
Yeah, agree.
All right. So we're like 8 weeks out from Christmas right now. Mm. Shock.
Yeah.
At the time of recording of this. Yeah. And it's been, a bit of an interesting year, both for e-commerce. Like I recorded an episode where I obviously talked about how e-com shopping is just gone through the roof in terms of the number of new shoppers and people that are repeat shopping and people that are buying, products that they used to go to a store, for example, grocery items, now buying them online. So we're seeing that real shift. So it's like, what are some quick wins that e-com businesses owners can do? They've got 8 weeks till Christmas.
Yeah.
Like what can we do?
Totally. I would just say make sure that you have your like options for people to subscribe so that you can start your email retargeting. And if you're not emailing your list regularly, start right now, like today.
Get an email out that's like, hey guys, it's not a salesy thing. You're not pushing, touching base.
So exactly.
You can start to build up to more sales focused emails.
Yeah. You've got like 4 weeks. If you did one weekly email, for the next 4 weeks, it's helpful. And then like start of Christmas, like bam, send you 2 or 3 sales emails kind of early December. And then I guess leading up to Christmas, to capture those last minute people, but you can't just do those sales ones and not have emailed them for a year.
No.
So start with that one.
And I think also, do go through that checkout process again.
Yeah.
Make sure that information is there.
Yeah.
And even perhaps consider what are the postage limitations going to be.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Year. Because, particularly where I am in Victoria, we still do have some lockdown and restrictions going on, and postage has been affected by that.
Yeah.
So you may need to really reconsider your lead times
for
your products and make sure that's communicated.
And overseas as well is going to be.
And, oh,
yeah,
gosh.
Almost too late now.
Forget about overseas. Almost.
Yeah.
Or just be, communicate heavily about the expectations around that. Don't promise that you can get product there.
Totally. And in saying that as well, if you're not going to make shipping times, make sure you've got a gift voucher option. So, and something that people can print at home and, that looks nice as well. So they can actually fold, print it out, fold it up, put it in a card. It's not just like an email or,
Like a nice picture. And
totally.
So we can all get a little something under the tree.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also think a big one is like Facebook pixels as well. So you can retarget, warm leads who have already been to your website. That's a really big, Facebook ads and Facebook pixels really seem to overwhelm people as well. So I encounter a lot of people who just haven't taken the time to do that. So I would definitely recommend just Google like how to set up a Facebook pixel and get that piece of code and send it to your developer and just get them to set it up. Well, I think it should be set up from the start.
Yes. If you have had a good developer, they will have done that for you. If you're not sure,
get them to help. Yeah.
Get them to help. There is a Chrome toolbar that you can use just to check if you have Facebook Pixel. Even if you're not thinking, oh, I'm going to do ads next week, get it, because the data that it'll start to collect.
Yeah, it actually takes time to build it up. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. How can people like follow you, get in touch with you, work with you?
Yeah.
What's your details?
So Instagram's probably my jam. So you can look me up at Seedling Digital. You can check my website out, seedlingdigital.com.au, or email me hello@seedlingdigital.com.au. But yeah, I'm always like available on Instagram as well. Like if you have questions, just feel free to like shoot me a voice memo on Instagram. I'm so happy to like riff with people if they have questions and, you know, having specific problems that I can troubleshoot. As I mentioned, I work mainly with WordPress. So in terms of like Shopify, the technical side and things like that, it's not really my jam, but I can definitely help with, I guess, front end and like user experience and that kind of stuff too. So yeah, it would be good to connect.
Yeah, I will definitely go and follow Nikki, because if only for the visual delight that is at Instagram. I love your designs. I'm just does that come out of your head? It's so amazing.
I know. I always think like, am I going to run out of ideas? But I haven't yet.
Touch wood.
Yeah, totally. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was really great to chat with you.
Yeah, and, totally. You too.
And learn a bit more about you as well. So
yeah,
100%. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Mel.
I really enjoyed that chat with Nikki, and I hope you did too. If you're loving the podcast, why not head on over and leave me a review? It'll help people just like you to find it. And make sure you're subscribed to get all the latest episodes right in your podcast player. That's it from me for now. Until next time, may your brand sparkle. This podcast is recorded on the traditional lands of the Wadawurrung people, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. We acknowledge the stories, traditions, and living cultures of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples on this land, and recognise that sovereignty was never ceded.